Hello once again, and welcome to episode 46 of Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast, a little outing that we have called a routine inspection. I'm Jerry Shario, and as usual, I get to introduce the host of this extravaganza, a gentleman who's an actor, author, playwright, musician, songwriter. Oh yeah, he does that too. A man who goes with this podcast like mustard goes with a hot dog. It's Nick Santa Maria.
Ho! Oh, yeah. My name is Nick Santa Maria. I like to sing and dance. And if you do not like it, I will punch you in the past. Hey! How is everybody? Great to see you. You know, I have to confess, that's one of the things that I sing out loud when I'm driving.
Okay.
But it's never Nick Santa Maria. It's always Punky Parkington. I don't know why, but my name is Punky Parkington. I like to sing and dance. And if you do not like it, I will punch you in the pants. Yes, my name is Punky Parkington. I like to go right there. And if you do not like it, I will hit you with a chair. Hey, this is what I do. And this is why I'm single. Jerry, me fine boy, me fine buckle. Tell me, how you doing? What's up with you?
Well, you know, just because I am wearing a green shirt today, we're not that close to St. Patrick's Day. But yeah, I'm doing well. I'm doing well, sir.
Yes. Whenever you say well, sir, I think of seltzer.
Yeah. You know? There you go. 2 cents plain. Yeah. It's taken a little bit of adjusting, you know, getting off the road again. Back into right. The house, but you know, the cat's happy that we're here, so that makes
great.
Us happy too.
Yeah, and what rhymes with happy is Chappie, and Chappie's my new cat.
Yes,
and he's in the window seat right now, cleaning himself.
Alrighty,
which is
something we all wish we could do. Yes,
yeah, but I keep falling off the window seat, which is pretty painful. And I want to address something very quickly, if you don't mind, Jerry. I just noticed you laughing at the last joke that I said. And I've gotten a couple of emails from people who imply that we are faking our laughter. Mm. Now, I would like to say to those people right now that, number one, you are 100% wrong.
Yep.
If there's more than 100%, you're that too. But we don't fake laugh. Jerry and I, we enjoy each other. We enjoy this podcast. We find it joyous. And yeah. We express that joy, but with laughter, you know? So let go of that whole, you know, Don Wilson, Ed McMahon, Harry Von Zell image. He is not any of those things, nor am I. So, you know, no. When I laugh, I'm just expressing the joy I feel in doing this podcast. Jerry, what do you feel?
I feel exactly the same way. And I know for a fact that I am not nearly as big as Harry Von Zell or Don Wilson or Ed McMahon. but I'm a guy who just likes to laugh. My goodness, you ask anybody that knows me, I can't seem to go more than 2 or 3 minutes without finding something to laugh at. I find that to be a great way to go through life.
I do too. And there's nothing that feels better. I mean, you know, there are other things that feel better, of course. But in public, there are very few things that compare to out and out laughter, especially laughter. Yes. When you can't control it and you're not supposed to laugh. That's the best. I mean, church laughing, theater
oh, yes.
laughing. Oh, God, it is just, you know, and when you laugh to the point where you're crying and you can't control it, it is just, it's nirvana. It's mm-hmm. It's why we're here, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep.
It's why we're here. That's joy. Anyway, so I wanted to address that. I think that's kind of unfair. One other thing, Jerry, I'm sorry. Very quickly, I'm going to let this go.
Okay.
I got another thing from somebody who said, I'm listening to the podcast with my 11-year-old, and some of your jokes are somewhat vulgar, and I have to, you know, kind of stop and explain. And I just wrote back to him. I said, you know, I'm a comedian. I've been a comedian for 50 years, and I can't change. You can. You can change the channel and mm-hmm. maybe go to a more pure and wholesome podcast. And I'm not being sarcastic here. I really mean this. But I can't change my ways, okay? I grew up with George Carlin and Lenny Bruce and all of that,
mm-hmm.
and they died for our sins. And I don't do censorship. And I don't do vulgar comedy either, I'll be honest with you. I talk for 2 hours. 2 hours. You try that sometime. And try not to be earthy at times, or when you think of a joke that, you know, is at the tip of your tongue. I'm a comic. I'm going to say it. All right. That's it. Those are all my gripes. I've got them out of the way.
Okay.
And that's that. Okay. So, Jerry, what we're doing today, it's kind of interesting what we're doing today. We discussed this not too long ago, and we decided to take, well, Jerry chose three of his favorite bits, routines, and I chose three of mine, although one has a, what would you call it, an addendum to it, or a two-parter? It's like a two-parter.
Yeah.
So we're going to look at these things, and we chose our favorite versions of these bits. Now, I'm going to include in the description of the show, I'm going to include all of the links we are discussing, so you could look at them at your leisure and, you know, reacquaint yourself with them so you can listen to our commentary afterwards. We're not going to speak during the clips. We're going to speak afterwards and talk about them and what we like about them, why we like them better than other versions, and so on. Hang on. I want to sound like a typical YouTube person. If you wait till the very last one, you'll see something very different and interesting if you stay till the last one. I'm so sick of that on YouTube, you know? I'm going to give you five reasons why you shouldn't talk to Murray. And the last one is really important. It's life-changing. Oh, yeah. Anyway, they're ruining YouTube. They are.
Yeah.
Every video is like that. I don't know. Are you as addicted to YouTube as I am, Jer?
I used to be. Not as much anymore. Although I am finding some new and, old new, hard to find things from the past. A couple of movies. In fact, you've hooked me onto a couple of films that are in their entirety on YouTube. And so I've got to see some of this stuff that I've wanted to for years, but I do not sit and scroll. I do not, you know, get onto YouTube and then realize it's 4 hours later.
so you stop doing that.
Yes, I used to do that back in the day when YouTube was a new thing. You know, I remember when.
put your teeth back in. No, but I don't know. I still scroll. I still look. Yeah. And I still find things. I mean, it's amazing what is featured on YouTube now. So many movies. So many. We used to complain in the movie buff world. We used to complain that Paramount had the worst record of releasing their films to physical media. They just didn't. And there's hundreds of films from the 1930s that are just sitting there. But YouTube, all of a sudden, has started showing these old Paramount movies from the early 30s into the mid 30s, you know, and these things were not released at all. So YouTube is a very worthwhile thing to check out. And Jerry, you saw my thing. I just watched all 14 Sherlock Holmes movies with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. And boy, oh boy, I was so sad when it ended. It was so much fun. I just love it. Yeah. Great stuff. I'm a big Universal guy. I love Universal Studios, especially during that period. And that's our boys. That's where they thrived. So we're going to start with yours, Jerry. I think we're going to start with your picks.
Okay.
And I'm thinking that your first one that you mentioned is Dollar a Day from One Night the Tropics. Now, this is an interesting choice because they only did this in one movie, and it was their very first film, and they didn't do it again until television. And I mean, as far as I know, I don't know if they ever did it on radio. I'm not that familiar with every radio show, but they didn't do it again until the Ed Sullivan Show, towards the end of their partnership. It was one of their last TV appearances, and they do it in a very interesting way. It's not just the two of them standing in front of a curtain. All right, you're fired. We're going to do this. Blah, blah, blah. No, they set up a scene And Jerry and I discussed this before. There's a scene with a young lady, a young actress. Lou is the husband, and she's chastising him about his tax returns and that he should be collecting his refund, but it never came. So she suggests he go to the tax office. And who is the tax man, ironically enough, Bud Abbott? And they do a version of 365 days. And at one point, Bud screws it up. And it kind of throws the routine off a little bit. Loop tries to pick up, you know, some of the slack by doing a lot of physical stuff. But the routine itself is just not as clean as the one in One Night in the Tropics. All right, let's take a look at that. And then we'll be back to talk about it.
A fine mess you got us in. You're fired.
All right, then I'm fired.
You're fired. I quit.
Go ahead. Give me my money.
What money?
The money you owe me for my salary.
All right. Don't get excited.
I'm supposed to get $1 a day, you know. I work for you 1 year. That's 365 days equals $365. Give me that $365 and I'll get out. I'll abdicate.
Now, wait a minute. Not so fast. How many hours a day did you work?
8 hours a day.
And how many hours are there in a day?
Don't try to put anything over on me, will you, Abbott?
What do you mean?
Look, there's 24 hours in a day. All but February, which has 28.
All right, that's right. 24 hours in a day. And you only work 8 hours a day? And you only work a third of each day. Now, a third of 365 is approximately $121. So you actually only have $121 coming to you?
Yeah. $121?
That's right.
Well, give me the
$121. But you didn't work Sundays, did you?
No.
No, and there's 52 Sundays in a year. So we'll deduct 52 from 121. Leaving $69 coming to you.
Well, give me the $69.
But...
What's with the but?
Wait a minute, just a minute. You only worked a half a day on Saturday. Am I right?
Here comes...
So wait a minute. You only worked a half a day on Saturday.
That's all, just half a day.
Okay, now there's 52 Saturdays in a year. Now half of 52 is 26. So we'll deduct 26 from 69, leaving $43 coming to you.
You sure that?
I'm positive.
I mean, I don't want you to cheat yourself.
Well, that's mighty thoughtful of you to look out for my interests.
I might as well look out for yours. You already killed mine. So give me that $43.
But just a minute. You took a vacation, didn't you?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks? That's 14 days. Now, a dollar a day, that's $14. So we'll deduct 14 from 43, leaving the sum of $29 coming.
The sum up. If I get some of it, I'll be lucky.
Well, now, wait.
Give me the $29.
But
now I know it as good as you do.
Wait a minute. Just don't get excited. You took time out for lunch, didn't you?
Oh, no, Abbott. Not that. Please don't take that away from me.
Yes.
1 little hour a day. That's all I took.
1 hour a day?
I didn't eat much.
Now, wait a minute.
1 little bit hour.
That's
that big.
That's right. 1 hour a day, 365 days. That's 365 hours. That comes to about 15 days, I take it.
You might as well take it. You've been taking everything else.
So?
15 from 29 is 14, but now I know it better than you do.
Wait a minute. I'm glad I thought of this. Do you know there's 13 holidays in a year that you didn't work?
This is going to cost plenty, too.
Wait a minute. Just a minute. You didn't work those 13 days?
No.
Well, you had $14 coming to you, so we'll deduct 13 from the 14, leaving the exact sum of $1 coming to you.
How do you like that? I'm supposed to get $365, and I wind up with a buck.
Oh, gracias, senor.
This is a fine time to take a nap.
One of the things I love about this routine, first of all, it's in their first movie, and so it's sort of the filmland introduction to Abbott and Costello. This routine is not the epitome, but it's the standard for their crosstalk. This is all in my opinion now. You know, I'm sure people might disagree, and if you do, get out of here. but the simple fact that Lou lets so much slide. I mean, my goodness, you watch this, and Bud is having deductions. You only worked 8 hours a day. Well, but you took an hour for lunch. That's 365 days. That's 300. No. And then you took vacation. That's 2 weeks where you didn't work. No. But Lou goes along with it. He gets caught up into the thing. And the fact that they just keep it going, keep it moving. I think most of my favorite bits of theirs have to do with money. I don't know what it is about it, but they just
a lot of their routines have a money theme.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they clicked in a little different way when there was money involved.
Right.
And
right.
So this, and then the punchline in this version of it, to mm-hmm. my way of thinking, is perfect. Yeah. He's left with the $1, and then the waiter just happens to walk by. Oh, gracias, señor.
And I wonder if John Grant came up with that, because that ending is it is perfect. You know, thank you, yeah. sir. And of course, Lou runs into the door and falls down.
Oh, you know? Yeah. You make okay, the fine well, time to take a nap.
Fine time to take a nap. Right. And Lou's unconscious, and Bud just starts slapping him anyway, but they cut that part out. Wake up. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's one of their more dazzling routines.
Yes.
Seeing it for the first time when I was a kid, because, you know, One Night in the Tropics didn't show up until I was in my teens. So it was one of the last films I had to see of them. And, you know, ironically, it was their first. But to see the truncated version of Who's on First, which was kind of jarring, actually. It was like, wait a minute, it's not done yet.
Yeah.
Where are they going? but this routine was brand new. It was brand new to me, and it was dazzling. It was a dazzler. They are on their toes. Yeah. Bud is Ramrod Steel. You know, he's just like, he's amazing. He's just amazing in this. He's driving it forward, driving it forward. But you notice the camera placement in this. It's on Lou. It's on Lou's face. So you see the frustration, you know, whatever. And Bud is sort of like three quarter, you know, away from the camera. But just pushing and pushing and pushing. And it's just, it's beautifully done. It couldn't have been done any better. You know, a lot of people talk about the Marx Brothers scenes, the crosstalk between Groucho and Chico. Mm-hmm. I don't think they match Bud and Lou. I love the Marx Brothers, and I love Groucho, and I love Chico. But, sorry. They're in Abbott and Costello territory, and the boys just have it over them, I believe. So anyway, this is a perfect example of that, and a great choice, Jerry. Great choice. All right, let's see what the next one is. Ah, yes, one of my favorites. Another early one. This is from Buck Privates, their first starring vehicle. I'm holding up my quotation marks because they weren't really stars of this movie. You know, they were co-stars.
Really.
Yeah, they were co-stars. They were comedy relief. You know, not to the extent that they were in One Night in the Tropics. But this movie, I mean, when you see the closing titles and you see that they're billed third and fourth, Universal wasn't sure. They weren't sure yet.
Yeah.
And boy, they sure shot themselves in the foot when they charged B movie money from the theater owners. And they only made like a third of what they could have. So take that, greedy Universal. So anyway, this is Loan Me $50. Now, if you're a Bud and Lou fan, and I know you all are out there, this is Bud Abbott logic at its best. And let's take a look at this, Jerry.
Hiya, neighbor. How you feeling?
Not a penny.
Oh, now, come on. Herbie, did I ask you for any money?
You got that look in your eye.
Oh, no. Listen, you cleaned me out in that crap game, didn't you?
You gave me a lesson. That's all I know.
Oh, do me a favor. Loan me $50.
Schmitty, I can't. I can't lend you $50.
Oh, yes, you can.
No, I can't. All I got is $40, that's all.
All right, give me the $40 and you owe me $10.
Okay, I owe you $10.
That's right.
How come I owe you $10?
Well, what did I ask you for?
$50.
And how much did you give me?
$40.
So you owe me $10.
That's right. But you owe me $40.
Now, don't change the subject.
I'm not changing the subject. You're trying to change my finances. Come on now, give me my $40.
All right, there's your $40.
Okay.
Now, give me the $10 you owe me.
I'm paying you on account.
On account?
On account. I don't know how I owe it to you.
That's the way you feel about it? It's the last time I'll ever ask you for the loan of $50.
Wait a minute, Smitty. How can I loan you $50 now? All I have is $30.
Well, give me the $30 and you owe me $20.
Okay, this is getting worse all the time. First I owe him $10, now I owe him $20.
Well, why do you run yourself into debt?
I'm not running in, you're pushing me.
Listen, I can't help it if you can't handle your finances. I do all right with my money.
Hey, you're doing all right with mine, too.
Now, wait a minute. I asked you for the loan of $50, you gave me $30. So you owe me $20. $20 and $30 is $50.
No. 25 and 25 is 50.
All right, here's your $30. Okay. Give me back the 20 you owe me. Fine guy. I'll loan a pal $50.
How can I loan you 50? All I got now is 10.
Oh, wait, to show you that I'm your pal, you want to double that?
Go ahead.
See you later. Go
wait
on,
a minute.
Go on.
I don't want that kind of money.
On the up and up. Hold it. Now take a number. Any number at all from 1 to 10. And don't tell me.
I got it.
Is the number odd or even?
Even.
Is the number between 1 and 3?
No.
Between 3 and 5?
No. I think I got
Between 5 and 7?
Yeah.
Number 6.
Right. How did he do that?
That is just perfect. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, it is perfection. It's just wonderful. And you were right. This is the best version of that bit. And I've seen them do it on Colgate Live. I've seen them do it with 50 cents in the TV show, the film TV show. Lend me 50 cents. Yeah.
Those two guys wouldn't have had $50 no matter what. So, yeah, they had to change that.
Those two paupers.
Yeah.
Although their rooming house wasn't bad, you know?
Yeah.
It looked clean. Mr. Fields kept it clean, I think. But anyway, I noticed a couple of things there. Number one, it was shot the way 365 Days was shot.
Yes.
You know, with the close-up on Lou, a partial shot on Bud, and occasionally they would cut back to Bud in close-up, you know, reacting to Lou. Did you notice at the end when he grabs the money, he missed it the first time? As
yes.
he's leaving, he goes to grab the 10, and he misses it and has to go, you know, grab it again. So they were going to call it Grab It and Costello, but anyway, so he grabbed the 10 and he walked out. That was when I was a kid, I would take my little cassette recorder and I would hook it up to my television, and I would, for this movie, I recorded all of the comedy scenes and the Andrews Sisters songs. I cut out all the love stuff, all the plot things. Mm-hmm. And what I had on tape was about 10 minutes. Seriously, the movie was so short. It was like a half hour, really, of Abbott and Costello routines and Andrews Sisters songs. But that tells you just how much they were comedy mm-hmm. relief. The leads were still getting the majority of the footage.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I say that In the Navy was their first official Abbott and Costello film.
Fair enough.
What do you have to say about that, Jer? You picked that one out?
Well, yeah, again, them dealing with money. It's always entertaining to me. And one of the keys, we've discussed this before, you know, especially in the in the realm of Who's on First. I've seen other people do Who's on First. And the one element that they neglect to include is the fact that Lou is frustrated with what's going on.
Yes.
He's not angry. He's not irate. He's frustrated.
Right. He just doesn't understand.
Yes. And that's what we've got going on in this one. Mm-hmm. The look on his face.
That's what I was going to bring up.
I'm paying you on account. On account I don't know how I owe it to you. I mean.
He's got that sweet, innocent face.
Yeah.
You know, like a baby. And, you know, there's not anger there. You're absolutely right. It's frustration. I can't understand your logic. And, of course, Bud's logic is the logic of the con man of the streets. So,
yes. And he tosses Lou a bone at the end there with, you know, pick a number.
I love
you can
that.
See the look on Lou's face. So he's maybe. And one of my all-time favorite, I don't know if it was a scripted line or an ad-lib line, but it's one of my all-time favorite responses from Lou. I think I got him. That is just so much fun.
I love that too.
I think I got him.
That's right up there with during the drill bit. Ah, gently. There
yes.
are certain things that just stay with you, you know? What time is it?
None of your business.
Yeah. It's just great stuff. That's all. It's great stuff. All right. So actually, that was a great second choice, Jer.
Yeah. And again, talking about, you know, the tie-in with the money, one of the biggest challenges I had in doing this prep for this episode was that a lot of my favorite bits still have to do with money, but they're all visual.
Yes.
And you can't do that on a podcast. Like One Night in the Tropics, you know, at the craps table there in the opening.
Yeah.
With Lou continuously trying to take the money out of Bud's hand and getting caught and give it back. And you...
they were still doing that in Meet the Invisible Man in 51.
Yes.
They were still doing that bit. They do it also in Naughty 90s. And there's an outtake where Lou forgets what he's doing. You know, his mind's not on it. So the bit that they did 8,000 times, he looks at the camera like he's completely lost. It's great. It's just great. There's another outtake where he says, I forgot the bit. Oh, mutter fodder. And it ain't hay. He gets lost. Wow. And he goes, I forgot the bit. He turns to the camera. I love that. Anyway. But yeah, okay. this has got that sweet ending, the pick a number from 1 to 10.
Yes.
Although my favorite version of that is from Whodunit. The pick a number from 1 to 10. 3. No, 2. You're wrong.
Yes.
And he goes, wait a minute, give me a chance. He goes, you pick a number from 1 to 10. He goes, 7. Oh. And he's right. And he has to go in to find the murderer.
I got to say, if we had picked 4 of our favorite bits, that was going to be my number 4.
And I don't blame you. It's one of the funniest things they ever did.
But again, it's the visual end. You know, it's the look on his face when he realizes. Now, granted, he does give that little what?
That.
Yeah. You got me. Yeah.
It really is. It's them to a T. But, you know, that's Whodunit, which is such a great movie.
Yes.
Truly great. Now, I have to say, your third pick,
yes,
so to speak, ironically speaking, I found a little interesting because, number one, it's very short.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I don't think it was written. I think this was one of the last things John Grant ever worked on for them because he died shortly afterward.
Oh.
After a Mummy. Died young. But yeah, I think that might have been the last, you know, routine, basically.
Yeah.
So it does have that kind of importance. But there's something, you know, I'll mention this after we watch it. And because, you know, there's something that happens quite a bit with Bud and Lou. And this is one of those instances. All right. So let's look at from Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. This is Pick the Pick.
This looks like a soft spot to dig.
Oh, here, I'll help you. Give me one of those implements.
Here, take your pick. There. Wait a minute, hold it. That's a shovel. Here's the pick over here.
Well, I picked the shovel. The shovel is my pick.
Oh, no, this is a pick. This is a shovel.
That's what I picked, is a shovel.
How can a shovel be the pick?
Look, if I'd have wanted a pick, I'd have picked the pick. But instead, I picked the shovel because the shovel is my pick.
Oh, in other words, you don't want to pick the pick because the pick is a pick and the shovel isn't a pick. If you pick the pick, the shovel isn't a pick.
Now you've got it.
Now I got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
You still don't understand, do you?
No.
Here, look. Here, now you take your pick. There you are. Now the pick is your pick.
Let's try it again. Now.
Now what?
Now come on, you take your pick. You took the shovel! Here's the pick over here!
All right, please, come on, dig a hole here. We're in enough trouble as it is, Lou. Now dig a hole there. You know, if we try to escape, we get lost on this desert. And if we stay here, we'll possibly wind up in that hole instead of Samuel. I don't know what to do. Something's got to be done. You can...
Hey, a midget mummy!
Okay, then it gets visual.
Yes.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, they are at the end of their Universal careers there. Bud is heavier than Lou. His voice sounds like, you know, he's gargled with gravel. It's interesting, but it's still funny.
Yeah.
They still have the funny. It's still, you know, Bud is pushing 60, you know, Lou is in almost 50, and the two of them still have the great timing, and they still pull this stuff off. Leonard Maltin wrote about this bit, right in those terms. Mm. In fact, I think it was Movie Comedy Teams, where he says that late in the game, they were still doing the great crosstalk wordplay, and this one was especially clever. The pick is... Yeah. Your shovel, the picker. So yeah, I think I also think this is a very good choice, but not a likely one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not one they say, oh yeah, Abbott and Costello, the great pick routine. the pick routine is my pick. But anyway, I laughed through it. I find it funny.
Yeah.
Why did you pick that one especially?
Well, a couple of reasons. The first of which, it came as a pleasant surprise the first time I saw this movie. Mm-hmm. Because, and I've not really done the math, but by my memory, they went for about 8 to 10 movies where there was none of this.
Yes.
They mm-hmm. didn't do any of these old routines. They didn't do any new old routines. Mm-hmm. And so here we are, their last movie at Universal, which one of the reasons I picked this routine also is because the others I picked were from the beginning of their film career. Now we're at the end. Yeah, yeah, now we're at the end of their Universal days.
And they're still funny.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And yeah. It's still there. And it's a reminder of sorts saying, hey, they still do this stuff and it still works.
Yeah.
One of the things that always gets me, I don't know how many different routines Lou throws in the line, I don't even know what I'm talking about.
You are saying what I was about to say.
But every single time I laugh.
And if you listen to his radio show, to the radio show,
yep,
he does it like every other show. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And he does it in Mexican Hayride. He does it. I mean, really, it comes up all the time.
Yep.
That's his go-to line for that. And I suppose, you know, it got laughs. But for me, it was like it never works better than in Who's on First.
True.
You know, that point where it's brilliant. It's yeah. a brilliant moment. You know, yeah. he explains everything perfectly. Bud said, now that's the first thing you've said right. I don't even know what I'm talking about. The context is there. It works beautifully. And mm-hmm. it doesn't, to me, this is my own opinion,
yeah.
it doesn't always work where they put it. You know what I mean? It's an easy go-to for them.
Okay.
And sometimes it works for me, and sometimes I just think, oh, no, they're not going to do that again.
Well, you know, like I've already said, I laugh easily. And yes. So, yes.
Me too.
There are times, yes, I agree, that line works better in other times. But here, again, to me, it's the last movie. It's been not a drought per se, but it's been a long time since we've had anything like this.
Right.
And it's almost true. That little taste of familiarity, you know, that yeah. I love watching Lou just lose steam and peter out with the picks, the pick, the shovel.
He kind of peters out.
Yeah.
It is. It's funny. It's still funny. Yeah. And then the midget mummy.
Yes.
Well, you guys have watched it. You've seen it. But yeah, I love it. And that's, you know, something that's great, Jerry. You went from the very beginning to the very end, the penultimate yep. movie, and they were still funny, still yeah. getting laughs.
Yeah.
When I think about singers, okay, I think about Sinatra, who went he stayed a little too long at the party. You know, it wasn't pleasant to watch towards the end. Whereas Bing Crosby was great right up until the end. His last album was amazing. It's so yeah. good. And that's Abbott and Costello. Laurel and Hardy, not so much. They mm-hmm. kind of petered out. They lost their mode of working and it didn't, you know, suit them so well. The movies aren't bad, not at all, but right. they're not what we expect from Laurel and Hardy. Abbott and Costello, on the other hand, were the Bing Crosbys, and I thought they were funny right up to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Mummy is a wonderful movie. I love it.
Yeah,
I have on my Fire Stick, my Amazon mm-hmm. Prime has a station called Universal Monsters, and they show Universal Monster movies all day and all night, mm-hmm. new ones, old ones, you know, you name it. And they're showing all the Abbott and Costello horror movies. And I think I've seen Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy like 4 times over the last 2 weeks. And I'm a bit tired of it. It's so good. And it's their penultimate movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, way to go, Bud and Lou. Way yeah. to go. So, yeah, that's 3 good ones, Jer. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your turn. Now,
let's see what I chose. I completely forgot. Okay. Yeah, here we go. We've got some interesting things here. I love, and I think this is also from Buck Privates, it's the you're 40 and she's 10. Now, I know they've done this, you know, in various films. It comes up in Coming Round the Mountain, mm-hmm. comes up in their film television show, comes up in the Colgate show. It's just a great, great routine. But they never did it better than they did in Buck Privates up at the top of their careers. So let's take a look at it and just see how good it is in that movie. Here we go. Buck Privates, you're 40 and she's 10.
Boy, am I dumb.
You are dumb. And to prove to you how dumb you really are, suppose you had $5 in this pants pocket and $10 in this pants pocket. What would you have?
The captain's pants on.
There you are, you
see. What are you asking me those kind of questions for?
Well, all silly.
Why don't you ask me a nice, easy one?
All right.
Ask me something about that big, a small one.
All right. Will you answer it?
Yeah.
All right. Say you're 40 years old. You're
40.
Well, I mean, just suppose you're 40.
If I was 40 years old, I wouldn't be bathing my feet here in the water. I wouldn't be in the Army.
All right, now wait a minute.
I mean, after all, I took my uncle's advice. My uncle told me, Sir Harvey, you go in the Army, that's all.
What uncle?
Uncle Sam.
All right, I understand.
He's my uncle,
yes.
Your uncle.
Yes, yes.
He's everybody's uncle in the Army.
Yes, I understand.
He's the only relative I got.
Wait a minute.
I like my uncle.
I know,
Sam.
We all do. But look, answer this question. You're 40 years old and you're in love with a little girl, say 10 years old.
This one's going to be a pimp.
Well, wait till I finish.
Now I'm going around with a 10-year-old girl.
Wait a minute.
You got a good idea where I'm going to wind up.
Will you wait a minute, please? Look, you're 40 years old and you're in love with this little girl that's 10 years old. Now, you're four times as old as that girl. You couldn't marry her, could you?
Not unless I come from the mountains.
There you go. You see, you won't.
Why don't you ask me something?
Wait a minute. Wait till I finish this. You're 40, she's 10, you're four times as old as that girl. Now, you couldn't marry her, so you wait 5 years. Now, the little girl is 15, you're 45. You're only three times as old as that little girl. So you wait 15 years more. Now the little girl is 30, you're 60. You're only twice as old as that little girl.
She's catching up.
Well, yes, yes. Now here's the question. How long do you have to wait before you and that little girl are the same age?
Well, what kind of question is that?
Answer the
That's
question.
That's ridiculous.
What's ridiculous about it?
If I keep waiting for that girl, she'll pass me up.
What are you talking
she'll
about?
She'll wind up older than I am.
Oh, that's...
And she'll have to wait for me.
Why should she wait for you?
I was nice enough to wait for her.
Oh,
if the girl
bed.
Don't want to marry me, she don't have to marry me.
Silliness, silliness.
I mean, after all, I like her. I'll marry her.
That's your whole trouble. Wait a minute. Where are you putting that water? Throw it out.
I think that's a brilliant piece of material. I just think it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, in this climate, our modern day political climate, that routine could never be done today. You know what I mean? It's the subject matter is a little too close to home as
yeah.
far as you know, the modern day scandals that are going on.
Oh yeah.
That sounds like a Broadway review, a musical
yes.
review.
Modern day scandals.
I like it. Let's do it, Jar. we can do our version of Who's On First.
Okay.
But anyway, I just think that this is the most perfect version of that routine. And this
mm-hmm.
is a routine they did everywhere, constantly,
oh, yes.
radio, television, movies, you know, nightclubs, whatever. But Bud makes the difference in this. Now, Lou is fabulous, as
mm-hmm.
usual, but Bud makes the difference. He is so smooth. He's so right on. His
mm-hmm.
timing is absolutely perfect. When people talk about Bud being the greatest straight man of all time, this is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
The fact that he is able to guide Lou, who can be a loose cannon, you know, going off on, you know, the whole thing about Uncle Sam was hilarious as far as
yes.
I'm concerned. He's the only relative I got. I mean, really. And you know he was improvising. You know it. Because Bud kept, he was being interrupted. So, but he had to pull Lou back, which was Bud's great gift.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I get just as much fun watching Bud as I do Lou in this sketch. And it is just, it is textbook burlesque comedy, straight man comic comedy. And I don't think it gets any better than this. Later on, Bud's timing was a little off. He got a little slower, a little slurrier, you know, and, just like in the pick scene.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually does flub a line very briefly, you know, but I notice it. I notice it. And it throws things off a little bit.
Yeah.
But in this, it is just perfection. So what do you think, Jar?
Oh, yeah. this has always been one that I've enjoyed, just for the line of logic, you know. It's and yeah, it was in Buck Privates. It was in, was it Coming Around the Mountain?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And there was an Noose Hangs High. They used it there too.
Yes, at the table, the big table routine.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes, that beautiful. if you want to introduce somebody to Abbott and Costello, just show them that scene from Noose Hangs High.
Yeah, they. It's like they get. It's like the greatest hits.
Yes. You
know, as they're sitting there, and I think it's like 8 minutes long. You know, of like uninterrupted that, yeah. routines.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but yeah, I agree with everything you've said. It's smooth, but just keeps it moving forward, and it just strikes me. I can somewhat identify with Bud having a partner who likes to go off on tangents every now and again, and you know, trying to keep
things. Don't talk about your wife that way. That's terrible. She's a very nice lady.
Yeah, she is. Oh.
Yeah, I can see how she tends to go off the time.
But yes, I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly. At most of their routines that they repeat, yes. There's usually one version, one presentation of it that is the best.
Right.
And to me, it's a tough call on this one. But yes, Buck Privates, this is the best one where they do this bit.
I think so too. I think that it's definitely a cut above the other ones. And it's also, I like the setting. You know what I mean? Bud's having a cigarette. They just yep. had a hard day. You know, he's soaking his feet. It's really a perfect place to do this routine.
Yeah.
It's a great setup. Anyway, the next is,
yes,
there's a little story that goes along with this one. Not a big story, but just, this is a routine that I didn't know existed until, I don't want to say recently, but, you know, late teens, early 20s, around mm-hmm. there. And when I say this, that's late in the game, my Abbott and Costello viewing started when I was, you know, before I was 10, you know, maybe 5 or 6 or whatever. So I had a lot of years of Abbott and Costello before I actually saw this routine. Now, it comes from one of their movies, Lost in a Harem, mm-hmm. which did not show up in New York. Maybe once a year, maybe once every 2 years, it would show up, and usually they would cut the scene. So it took me seeing, you know, on DVD when they finally released it, or when I finally saw a full copy, this yeah. routine became one of my all-time favorites. And I can't believe that it wasn't more widely known or appreciate it. And I know they did it a few times. And I have to say, I love the version in Lost in a Harem. But in my opinions, I tend to veer towards live performance.
Yeah.
There's nothing like the sound of live laughter. And when they did this routine on the Colgate Comedy Hour, and Lou goes a little crazy, you know, a few things happen, they laugh, they have a great time, and yet they still get the routine out there. Now, Jerry was talking about, you know, some of these things are visual. I would urge you to hit the link and go to the routine itself and watch it, because it is very visual. And it's, to me, it's just so funny. Lou and saying tin and getting Bud angry about it, and Bud constantly slapping him. And it's just, it's primo Abbott and Costello. So let's run the clip and we'll talk about it afterwards. Here we go. This is the magic trick.
Now we quiet. Now we place it over the bottle like that. Now over here, we place the silver.
We place, yeah, sure.
Silver over the little glass. Now we say a few words in magic, such as, Hocus, elegus, M.
Quick!
You see, go over.
I got the breeze.
Oh. And over here, we now have the little glass. And over here, we now have the bottle. Now, that should go good.
Yeah, that's
good.
That's cute. Hey, Abbott, can you make the bottle go back over there and the glass over there come back over here?
You mean to transfer the glass from over here?
Yeah, like.
Over there and. Transfer the bottle from over there over there.
Yeah, make the bottle from over there.
Abbott, look out! Rob,
Silver.
Silver, Governor.
I'm not going to say that other word.
No.
Not a cold.
No, I don't expect you to say it.
No more.
Oh, no, you're using brains now.
Certainly.
That's the boy.
Think I'm a chump?
Well, keep quiet, please. I'm doing the trick. Now, we place it over the bottle like that. Then we come over here and we place it over the little glass. Focus, focus. Alligazam. And over here. We now have... over here. And over here, we now have the little glass. And over here, we now have the bottle. So you see, friends, it's all done with a little silver cover. That's why I don't like to have it being accused of buying tin. I don't like the very cheap article. Don't mess with the trick now. Now, do you understand that, Lou?
Yeah.
You see, you take the cover and you place it over there and you say the few words of magic. And Zowie, it goes... Come
on, Apollo, come over here. Come on over here.
Now, look, here's the idea of the trick.
Will you come on over, Bob?
Not quite.
Abbott.
Abbott.
I know what's going to happen.
What?
Abbott, make a bottle over here.
Oh, I'm just after doing it. I showed
make
you.
Make a bottle over here.
But I showed you how to do the trick.
Never mind this table. Make a bottle over here.
I'll do it once more. Now watch it closely, because you've got to help me.
Never mind this table. Make a bottle over here.
Right, over here we have a glass. Am I right?
That's all you're going to find
there
over there.
There we have a little glass. There we have a bottle. Now, you'll notice there's nothing in the little covers. We just place it over the bottle like that.
Yeah.
And one over the little glass. Now we say a few words in magic. Hocus pocus, alligazam, and here we have the glass.
Make a bottle over here.
Oh, yes. And over here, we now have...
hey, put the tin thing back and see if you can find it.
Oh. I said tin and it didn't even hear it.
Oh, shut up. Here we now have... We now... I have a little trick and card here I'd like to play. And over here,
make it, come on.
We now have the bottle.
I love that routine.
Yep.
First of all, once again, Bud, did you see his face when the bottle didn't show up?
Yes.
Did you see his face, his take?
Oh,
it
yeah.
was great.
Oh, yeah.
It was perfect. Just perfect. And then, you know, him pushing him into the thing in the background and the two of them laughing. I don't know. Oh. There's something about them working live that is just so much more fun than their film show. I mean, I love their film show, but there's nothing like live performing. And that's such an unusual routine for them. You know, it's like, I didn't grow up with that one.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the best things they've ever done. I love it. I just love it. And Bud is so good in it. He's so good with the magic, first of all.
Yeah.
He's very deft. He's very meticulous about what he's doing. And Lou is hilarious. You know, they cut out a lot of, in this clip, there was a whole thing about him calling the silver things tin. And Bud kept slapping him. Every time he said tin, he would get slapped. So that's the part that was left out. But that's not the important part. What we watched was the important part, the magic trick itself. So, Jerry, when is the first time you saw this routine?
Well, quite honestly, much later than you.
Really?
I was obviously aware of Lost in a Harem and Abbott and Costello in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until they came out together on DVD as part of a box set. I'm sure you know the one I'm talking about. It had Laurel and Hardy and a couple of Stooges features. But it was the first time I saw it. And that's got to be like, you know, in the last 20, 25 years.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that was the first time I ever saw this. And just I fell in love with it. this particular performance of it, I see a little more connection between this and the lemon bit as far as Bud's presentation is concerned. You know, he's being the showman. He's being the huckster. Here we go. All right. Pay attention. And
I love when he takes out the cards.
Yes.
He's trying to get them back, you know. I just think it's so funny. He's so good in this.
Yeah.
And again, his take when the bottle doesn't show up where it's supposed to, it's perfect.
Yep.
It's no less than perfect.
Yep.
And then Lou being the little gremlin, you know, trying to destroy Bud's act. But, you know, this is interesting, this bit, because usually Lou is invited in as the innocent one and he turns the tables on Bud.
Yeah.
In this one, Lou thought he was getting the better of Bud and Bud turns the tables on Lou.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting dynamic. And to me, I still can't watch this routine without thinking of it as new Abbott and Costello.
You know?
So it's fresh. So yeah, that is definitely one of my all-time favorites. Now, we are about to step into the part that most of the people are tuning in for, as I've been made aware of. Hi, Chappie. Sorry, my cat just jumped up.
Even Chappie is tuning in at this point.
Chappie's happy because the routine is snappy.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy, and I'm his pappy. Anyway, enough of these rhymes. I have copies of our favorite version of Who's on First, which is the Naughty 90s version. And I have a version from, it's on YouTube, but you have to look for it. I'll supply the link. Bud Abbott was ill for a radio appearance, and they were set to do Who's on First. And Lou needed a replacement, so he went to Mr. Fields. One of Mr. Fields' relatives was a straight man, and Melonhead Fields. No, he went to Sid Fields, and Sid Fields came in to play Abbott's part in Who's on First. And it's so interesting, the difference between the two. Now, I've seen, and Jerry has seen, the Naughty 90s version about 9,000 times, so I don't think I need to rewatch that. But I would love to give a listen to Lou and Sid doing their version of Who's on First. And if you're hearing this for the first time, enjoy. Here we go. It's very different.
Pinch hitting for Bud Abbott, who was suddenly taken ill, is Sidney Fields, better known as Professor Melonhead. Boys, you're on.
Well, Professor Melonhead, old boy, how's everything?
All right, Lou, everything's fine.
I understand now that Abbott isn't here. He used to be the manager.
Abbott used to be the manager of the team.
Yeah, I understand he's going to make you the manager.
That's right. In fact, I am now the manager of the team.
Don't make it any tougher than he does for me.
All right.
I would finally like to know some of the guys' names on the team, so when I meet them on the street or in a ballpark or in a drugstore, I'll be able to say hello to those guys.
Well, know the names of the ball players on the team.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, well, I know them.
Good. Well, give me the guys' names on the team.
Well, who's on first? What's on second? Now, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
Abbott made you the manager?
That's right.
You know the guy's names?
Of course I do.
Then tell me the fellow's names on the ball club.
Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third.
You know the guy's names?
Of course I do.
Well, then who's on first?
That's right.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
Who's on first?
That's right.
Have you got a first baseman?
Of course.
Then tell me the first baseman's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who's playing first?
What are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's right.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
Have you got a contract with a first baseman?
Of course I have.
Who signed the contract?
Exactly.
Somebody has got to sign the contract on first base. Now, who signed it?
Correct.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
Somebody on first has got to get it. Now, who gets it?
Who?
The fellow on first.
Who? Who gets the money?
Well, he better get it. Look, all I want to know is what is the guy's name on first base?
I don't know. What's on second? Who's on first?
Now, what are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. Who's on first? He gets the money. Sometimes he sends his wife for the money.
Whose wife?
Yes.
Look, all I want to know is what is the guy's name on first base that's going to get the
What's
money?
What's on second? Who's
I'm
on...
not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Now, what's the guy's name on first?
What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Third base. He plays third.
Who plays third?
Who plays first?
How did I get on third base? I'm asking you, what's the fellow's name on third base now?
What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He plays third.
Here I go, back on third again. Will you please stay on third base and don't go off it?
All right.
Now, who is playing third base?
Who's playing first?
I'm not asking you what's on first.
What's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. You got an outfield?
Of course I have.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask you. Now.
I just thought I'd tell you.
Well, tell me who's playing left field.
Why?
What's the guy's name in left field?
What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. In the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Because he's in center.
You got a pitcher on a team?
Of course, certainly.
The pitcher's name?
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
Of course I do.
Then tell me who's going to pitch tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Who's going to pitch?
Oh, no. Who's on first?
I'll break your arm, you say, who's on first. I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
The pitcher's name tomorrow.
What's
on second?
I don't know. Third base.
No. Very simple.
You got a catcher on a team?
Of course we've got a catcher.
The catcher's name?
Today.
Today?
Yeah.
And tomorrow's pitching?
That's correct.
All we got is a couple of days on a team. You know, I'm a catcher, too.
You catch?
Yeah. Now, I'll get behind the plate. I'll do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and the heavy hitter gets up.
Yeah?
Now, when tomorrow throws the ball, the guy up bunched the ball. Me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Naturally.
If I throw the ball to first base, somebody has got to get it. Now, who gets it?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
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 So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's right.
So I throw the ball to naturally.
No, you throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
I throw the ball to first base, then who gets it?
Naturally.
Okay. I throw the ball to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's right.
Then who gets it?
Naturally.
He better get it.
Every time.
Who?
Naturally.
I throw the ball to first base. Whoever it is drops the ball, so the guy picks it up and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play. Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What did you say?
I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
You must be...
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I feel like, how can I put this? It's off. It's just
it
off.
Is.
Lou is driving it, whereas
yep.
Bud always drives the bit. Mm-hmm. Lou is, how can I put it? He's like handing Sid Fields the cues, you know, and sometimes Sid is getting it and other times he's going to the wrong place and yep. Lou has to pick it up from there. This is just fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a guy, Sid Fields, who came from burlesque just like the boys did. And I'm sure he's done versions of Who's on First in his past, but this one is just so set in stone. You know what I mean? When you listen to Abbott and Costello do it, yes, they do it differently. Sometimes they throw each other off, you know, they have fun with it, but it's basically the same, you know, we expect the same points, you know, mm-hmm. I'll break your arm. You say Who's on First,
yeah,
you know, things like that. The things that we really enjoy about the sketch. And I just feel like this was, I mean, thank goodness he was there. I'm sure Bud had an epileptic seizure mm-hmm. or something along those lines. And it's a good thing Sid was there and someone who is somewhat aware of how the routine goes. But to me, the most fascinating thing was listening to Lou guide him in a way that yeah. didn't make him seem like the aggressor. And mm-hmm. that's part of Lou's genius. You know, he just yeah. took it and he turned it into something. How did you feel about that? I know you listened to it yesterday.
Well, yeah. And something that struck me just now, listening to it again, it's the fact that Sid Fields was playing Mr. Fields.
Yes.
The relationship mm-hmm. from the TV show, even on their radio show, he would appear as a Professor Melonhead.
Professor Melonhead,
as they say at the top here. The relationship that Melonhead had with Costello was very antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
And he carried that through in this routine. And that's what takes away from it. You know, Bud mm-hmm. is not antagonistic. Bud is genuinely trying to explain who these people are.
Right.
And it's that arrogance, maybe, that just... left a bad taste in my mouth when I heard this one.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't blame you. I listened to this for the first time like a couple of years ago mm-hmm. When it was first made available. And I turned it off in the middle. I mean, I went back and listened to it eventually. But I turned it off in the middle because I found it very uncomfortable to listen to, taking what I consider to be my favorite comedy routine of all time, Who's on First. It's something I love, something that's a part of my fabric, part of my DNA. And to hear someone else come, you know, like we always talk about, you know, nobody did it like Bud and Lou.
Yeah.
And when you hear other people do it, you know why mm-hmm. Bud and Lou were so amazing. This is that. This is that same thing. But it's being done with a burlesque, a perennial, a guy who knows burlesque like the back of his hand. And it still didn't come off. It didn't come off. How can I put this? He's aggressive, but he's not like Bud. He's not like the engine. You know what I mean? He's not chugging it forward constantly. And I also got the impression that it wasn't acted very well. We talk about Bud and Lou as actors and how something so contrived as Who's on First works like a charm because they both act it beautifully.
Yes.
Lou plays the frustration to the hilt and Bud plays the guy who's trying to get it across and you believe every second of it.
Yeah.
I didn't believe this at all. I'm sorry. He was a replacement. You know, hey you, can you do Who's on First? Come here. That's what it reminded me of. It even sounded like they didn't rehearse. I mean, I know that's no great surprise with Lou, but you know, it sounded like they just said, you know it. Come on, we can do it. We'll do it. We'll get in front of the mic and we'll do it.
Yeah.
It sounded like that. It reeked of it. So mm-hmm. so it definitely is not my favorite version of the routine. I have to say. No, that will always and forever be the one shot for Naughty 90s. And I know it was cobbled together. You know, they shot a couple of different days. The cameramen were laughing in the background, all that stuff. It's still the cleanest, best performed version of that routine. And that goes for radio, television, and even One Night in the Tropics when they did a truncated version of it. Yeah. But yeah, this was fascinating because we love Sid Field. We love
him.
He's wonderful in the TV show. He's great on the radio show. Mm-hmm. And he's great when he shows up in different places. Like I've said in the past, he did the same kind of stuff with Jackie Gleason during a season of American Scene Magazine, which was the variety show. He shows up there. He initially showed up on the Eddie Cantor radio show playing Mr. McGuffey. I think that was his name, McGuffey. And it was basically, you know, Melonhead.
Yeah.
So there he was, this wonderful seasoned burlesque performer, and it didn't work. Fascinating. Fascinating, Captain. So did I just do Leonard Nimoy? My God, I'm not I'm not a Trekkie at all. you know, I think I've seen two episodes in my entire life, and that includes all of the other shows that followed and all of the movies. I think I've seen two episodes of the original.
You've only seen two episodes? Oh my.
I know. I'm not a science fiction fan. Yeah. My favorite science fiction is 1950s goofy, you know, monsters and giant bugs and things like that.
them.
So, Jerry, any final words about, especially this one, especially about Mr. Fields stepping in?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Well, as we've said before, you know, we've talked about this in the past, seeing other people try to do the routine. I think I shared the story where I went to see a production of Damn Yankees, and two of the ball players came out in front of the curtain before the show and did Who's On First, and I almost walked out.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was just not good.
Oh, my.
yeah, quite honestly, I'm going to brag a bit here, but when my son was 9 years old, he understood how to do Who's On First. He and I performed it at his school talent show. Go to YouTube, you'll find it. But he understood what made it work. And it was just, it was a highlight of my life being able to perform that with my son.
That's wonderful.
But yeah.
Every father should perform Who's On First with their son. I think, you know, it's a great bonding thing.
Yeah.
But your son understood that it was frustration and not anger.
Yes.
Right? As he played the Lou role. And you were Bud. Did you drive it? Did you drive it forward?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Kept it moving.
But it's
because they do it so well, because it's such an iconic piece of material, when it is not done properly, it just really hurts.
Oh, God. It's like seeing a bad Shakespeare. Seriously.
Yeah.
It's like seeing, you know, when they don't have a clue as to how it should be.
Yeah.
And you just sit there shaking your head thinking, why didn't somebody say something? You know, why didn't a friend step forward and say, you know what, this isn't good? But anyway, that doesn't happen in real life, unfortunately. So let's talk about something here. I want to talk to you about something. I've been having, you know, I've been getting some emails from people suggesting, you know, topics that we should cover. Mm-hmm. And some people are getting anxious about moving on to other comedy teams and talking about them, which I'm all for. And we've discussed this, Jerry. Mm-hmm. My only problem with that, and that has to do with you, Jerry, is the fact that a lot of the comedy teams, you know, like Wheeler and Woolsey and, you know, Brown and Carney and, you know, all these other ones, lesser known comedy teams, I'm very familiar with. I've made a study of them already. So I would want you as your homework before we got to that, like, let's say we wanted to do an episode about Wheeler and Woolsey and their films. I could give you links to, let's say, their five best films, and you'll get the idea. You know what I mean? If you watch these films, you'll get the idea. And we can discuss, you know, Wheeler and Woolsey in another episode. So I just wanted to clear that with you because, you know, you know me, I'm a nut, I'm a lunatic. And, you know, I grew up on these things. This was my food. So I would want you to be up on it so you could be definitely a part of the conversation.
Sure.
And but only if it's stuff you're not familiar with. And I know there is a lot of stuff you are familiar with. So I just want our listeners to know that we are going to do that eventually. And it should be soon, actually, because we're running out of Abbott and Costello things. People have suggested stuff. I don't want to talk about the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. You know, you've seen one, you've seen them all, basically. And we already had featured one, and I'm still getting over it. I'm still in therapy after watching that stupid cartoon. So, yeah, I don't really want to do that. Other people are suggesting, like, contests and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to make a statement here, and Jerry, please allow me this. I'm sorry, but I really want to say this.
Go right ahead.
Basically, I'm a comedian. I've been in show business for 50 years. I have sustained a career. I've been on Broadway. I have ad-libbed on Broadway. I've been given permission to do that. I was hired over 500 applicants to play the genie in the $10 million production Aladdin, A Musical Spectacular. While I was playing the genie and the only person working for Disney who was allowed to ad-lib, someone from Mel Brooks's office saw me work and asked me to come to New York and read for what was the most popular show in the world at the time, The Producers. Well, I auditioned. And you know what? Without a callback, my agent called me and said, we have to get in touch with Actors Equity to see if they will honor what they want to do with you. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? There were three productions of The Producers at that time. There was Broadway, there was the first national tour, and there was the second national tour. They hired me for all three productions. I covered 28 different roles, including Max Bialystock, Franz Liebken, and Roger Dubree. And
wow.
Every male ensemble role. They had to get permission because they would fly me first class to Broadway, back to the first national tour, to the second national tour, wherever they needed me. So for those of you who are listening in and saying things like, oh, you're not funny. Oh, why do you talk so much? Oh, blah, 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 blah. You know what? I have faith and confidence in only one thing in my life. Okay? I don't talk about my looks. I don't talk about my body shaming. I'm just, you know what? I'm confident in one thing. And that's my talent. It's what I've had since I was a little boy. It's mm-hmm. what I've honed, what I've worked on, and what has benefited me my entire life. So I'm not going to change. I'm not going to change. So, you know, whatever complaints you have about this or anything you don't like, just like television, don't watch, don't mm-hmm. listen. Mm-hmm. I really don't care at this point, okay? Because Jerry and I are enjoying ourselves.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
what it's all about. Right, Jerry?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
When Big it job. Stops being fun, what are we going to do? We're going to stop it.
Yep.
So join in the fun, everyone. This isn't a threat. This isn't like me being a brat. I hear this. You know, it says, hey, why don't you try this or why don't you do that? No, I'm going to do what I do and what I've been doing for 50 years. And Jerry and I are doing very well. I've listened yes. to the podcast, and to be honest, I'm a fan. I think it's a fine podcast. So I hope you enjoy it too. And you know what? If you have something negative to say, I don't want to hear it. Don't say it. Don't send it. I don't want to read it anymore. I'll delete it. Okay? Just join in the fun. Join in the joy. Okay? We're inviting you to do that with us. All right. That's all I wanted to say. Jerry, as usual, I just had the time of my life. You are just the best partner I could have.
I am in total agreement with you on that, my friend. And I just would have given my left eye tooth to have seen you as the genie or in The Producers. But this is a close second. This runs a close second, doing this with you here.
Thank you, bud. Thank you so much. And it's you know what? We're two professionals. We are two professional performers.
Yes.
And, you know, when you talk to us that way, when you tell us we're fake laughing or you're talking about two professionals, you know? Have a little respect. That's mm-hmm. all. We put a lot of time into what we do, and we're not getting paid for it. This is all free. So I don't want to hear any more negative stuff, okay? Put that away. And who's not subscribing? Who's not subscribing? I want to know. I want names. I want a list of names. Who is not subscribing? I've been asking you constantly to hit the subscribe button. And that's another reason we will stop doing this, because if we're not getting out to you and you're not helping us out, what's the point, really?
Yep.
So anyway, okay, my tirade is over. No, I, you know what? We love you all, and don't worry about it, but we just want to share the joy. That's all.
Yes.
All right. Jerry, you have a wonderful, wonderful couple of weeks, and we will get together soon with a new topic, and we will decide on what that is when the time comes.
Yep.
And in the meantime, I hope you're not freezing over there in Washington Ooh. State.
No, we're actually good.
Yeah.
In fact, people here are complaining about the fact that we're not getting snow.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. That's interesting.
They
should
know.
Move to the East Coast.
Yes.
They'll get all they need.
Nice.
And here in Florida, you know, it's like it's in the 30s at night. And you know, I do my walk when it's 48 degrees. And it's actually quite wonderful.
Nice.
I feel like if it was like this all the time, I would actually like Florida. But it ain't. All right. We should go. We should let these people go, get to their cars and drive home. Okay. Take care, everyone. On behalf of Jerry and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining in to another episode of Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast. Remember to pick up my book, written with the great Matthew Conium, forward by the director John Landis. It's the annotated Abbott and Costello, the definitive book about Abbott and Costello and their films, regardless of what anyone says. Okay, you guys, take care. We will see you soon, and we really look forward to it. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.